We're up.
We should be good. Oh, can you hear any background noise?
No.
Okay.
No, your wife is not on the podcast today, if that's what you're asking.
Good to hear, good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I need to make a thumbnail for our YouTube. Well, you made one last year. You put some effort into that one. I'll just use
did
that.
Did I ever? So. Yeah.
It's much appreciated.
Go for it.
Sure you
I mean,
very look, frustrated that it was never used, but it should be used.
I don't particularly care either way that it was used or never used.
It will be used, I promise.
All right, it's fine by me. You don't have to. We can make a new one. I know some designers.
All right, just putting out the tweet to say we're live to talk some MLS action. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we are good to go.
Hold on. Copy.
Do you have any preamble?
Sending this to Gavin. Texting it to you. This is from our St. Louis correspondent.
This is a story of a girl. I don't know any of the other lyrics. Oh.
There you go. That's a text for you.
Oh, you said Cincinnati, but it's from St. Louis.
I didn't say Cincinnati correspondent. I said St. Louis correspondent.
Wow, that's long. Okay.
You asked for thoughts.
Yes, I did. We got him. They didn't put it in the group chat, though.
I know. They messaged it to me specifically. And, you know, here's the thing.
They hate me.
I'm glad they sent something. Well, they do. You know, and I frequently say that to my wife whenever we're driving and you don't answer the call. Like, we say this of every single person that doesn't pick up.
It's not just me specifically.
Yeah, but it's generally you, because usually you're the only one that ignores my calls when I'm driving. But, like, specifically it'll be like, is Gavin going to answer? Is Gavin going to answer? No, he hates us. He hates
us. You guys got to start putting some bets on it.
No, I don't need to put bets on it, Gavin. I mean, look, it's easy money, though, if I did put bets on it. So
yeah.
Like, it's like minus 500 odds that Gavin ignores a phone call from me.
I don't ignore it. I'm just a busy person, okay? That's all.
Busy, yes.
I am.
I trust you, Gavin.
You're coming after me for no reason, bro.
I'm not coming after you for no reason, Gavin. I'm coming after you for the reason that you ignore my phone calls and hate me.
I'm usually either working, or I'm cooking, or I'm cleaning the dishes, or I'm driving somewhere and I don't see it, or I'm watching TV, or, you know, there's a million different things I could be doing.
Four of the five things you've listed are things that you could talk while doing.
You could talk while doing.
Anyone could talk while doing.
Yes, I could. I'm not good on the phone. I should say that.
Gavin, you're not good at answering the phone. You're fine once you get to it.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not good at answering the phone. No.
Well, see, now we're making progress. Step one is admitting you have a problem.
I do have a problem. I don't like being on the phone, which is weird because, again, I'm always on the phone, as I said last week.
Which is extra weird because you're on meetings. An internet phone call. That we're broadcasting to the internet.
Yeah, whatever.
And recording.
Whatever. You're just, one of us is abnormal, and it's up to the listeners to figure out who.
It's probably the, you know what, I'll keep my mouth shut on that one.
Yeah. Keep your mouth shut on that one. All right, shall we get started? We started a little late today.
All right.
Yeah. Gavin, you know what that means, right?
It's time for a week four episode.
Yeah, it's another Monday. Here we are. Live on the air, 9:12 p.m. on Monday. I'm going to just timestamp this just on the off chance that something occurs in the wide world of MLS, and then someone's like, why didn't you talk about this? Well, if it didn't occur prior to 9:12 p.m., I didn't know about it. So don't yell at me.
Really, like 10:45, because it'd take a lot for us to figure out while we're recording that something happened.
I feel like
unless someone came into the chat and told us.
So I feel like you should have moved the time upward then. And if it didn't happen prior to 7 p.m. on Monday.
Yeah, okay. Fair. Yep.
Right, because Gavin, I know you gotta cook your dinner and ignore me. You have to spend time with your wife and ignore me. You have to take the dogs and the cats outside and, of course, ignore me.
Ignore you, yep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
that's what we do.
Right, you know, here. Hey, if you would like to follow the adventures of Gavin while he's ignoring me on social media, you can find him on social media at LionsBlog1. Gavin's holding up a giant L. He's indicating the result of the Orlando match, spoiling it for everyone. Thank you very much, Gavin.
I knew that.
You know, it was deserved.
Yeah.
You can also find the podcast itself on social media at MLS Now Podcast, and you can find me, your host Russell, on social media at Mr. Danger Russ. Gavin, happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Yeah, the L thing. As soon as I put it up, I was like, oh, he's jumping on that one.
Oh, you cannot hold up the letter L in front of me when your team lost and not expect me to jump on it, unless my team also lost, and they didn't in this case. So that was fair game.
Fair game. Yep. No, yeah, Orlando took a fat L. I'm doing good. Damn. How was your weekend?
Well, Orlando taking a big fat L means that one of my bets paid out. So
feeling good.
FCC won. I got some money on the bet. I didn't win for the normal one because of course, we're just cursed. I think. Yeah, we're now 0-4, which is phenomenal. Truly, I mean, it's insane that I'm winning money on all the things that I'm not, you know, wagering on this. But every time we pick some teams, it's just like, no, never. So, you know, we've hit that topic early on. Neither of us won once again, continuing that we don't know what we're talking about. Unless we're off camera, off air, and then we do know what we're talking about. So,
right,
is very on brand for us.
Yep.
So,
shall we? What's our big? Do we have a big storyline today to hit on?
Is it a big storyline? If I've been talking about this and like ranting about it for like 2-3 weeks now, the thing going on with one of the reporters, the beat reporters who covers FC Cincinnati, because I think it should be part of a larger dialogue, which is, so some background context here. One of the beat reporters that covers FC Cincinnati, and they've covered the team for a very long time, since basically the inception in 2016, had their press credentials suspended by the team. Now, this may not necessarily be newsworthy on its own in isolation. However, they put out, the reporter in this case put out just a statement on their Patreon to some of the people who subscribe to them, notifying them, hey, I'm not going to be providing quotes from the team for the next 2 weeks because my credentials have been suspended. You know, I disagree with it, etc. And from there, you could either leave it alone or you could do what FC Cincinnati did and 5 days later make a statement that is, I would almost 100% say, not run by any legal compliance or PR department, because it makes some very unsubstantiated claims about the beat reporter violating Society of Journalism standards and professional ethics. Again, unsubstantiated, no claim to back that up. So I'm no lawyer, but I'm pretty sure unsubstantiated claims attacking someone's reputation that might harm them from being able to, as a reporter, find employment in the future would probably be subject to a defamation or libel case. But, you know, again, I'm not a lawyer. That's up for other people to decide. And then they just continue to double down on it. More and more media were picking this up. People from The Athletic picked this up. Fan bases from other teams picked this up. ESPN Soccer picked this up. Like, the National Association for Soccer Reporters was in dialogue with MLS on this. So it's been increasing in the amount of attention that it's been getting. And I think for me, one of the big questions is where do you expect reporters to go from this? Because the league ostensibly wants to be seen as a reputable league. It wants to be seen as a place players would want to go. It wants to be a content generating machine. It wants to be relevant in pop culture. It wants to, I'm assuming, be part of the national dialogue when people get in on Monday morning, and they want the brand awareness to be very high. So if you're going to be suspending press credentials, and we can get into the nitty gritty maybe another time, but basically every single media platform, fan bases, the various reporters are all basically coming in saying this is BS by the part of FC Cincinnati, and this reporter hasn't done anything wrong and has done what any good reporter would do, and it's just the club taking issue with it. If they haven't done anything that another reporter would do, to me, this seems like a very, very poor decision on the part of FC Cincinnati. And it's not the first time that a team in MLS has done this to reporters. So, I mean, on the topic of image control, which is, I think, what this really comes down to, where do teams draw the line, and where do they just have to accept that you can't always control the narrative? You can be accessible, you can give comment, you can be proactive, but you're never going to be able to control the narrative if you want to be mentioned in the same breath as leagues like NBA, NFL, MLB. There's tons of independent journalism covering those. There's tons of fan blogs, there's tons of podcasts, office chit chat, water cooler conversation. Those leagues cannot control 100% of what's talked about. And I don't think MLS should try to do that either. They need to just accept it personally.
Yeah, I agree. MLS, I think consistently the different clubs within the league as a whole tend to be very secretive, tend to be very, you know, controlling of their image. And I think where clubs should draw the line is let it happen. Let people talk, let people report, let them do their job. And like, stay silent. Stay silent on matters. Unless it's, you know, big controversy, like what Portland had to go through, you do a PR statement. Yeah, that's what right. I was thinking of.
Statement. Go hire a PR firm. Do not do that yourself.
New York Red Bulls, do a PR statement for their issue last season with their player. Philadelphia, on and on, right? We've seen statements, a lot of statements, and statements happen all the time from clubs. But when it comes to reporting is just reporting. So at the end of the day, there is that level of how accurate is this? For the reporter in question, everyone trusts her reporting because she has that long withstanding experience with the club and has been an excellent reporter throughout her time. So we all trust it, but there's always that little bit of, I guess, doubt that a club can cling on to, and just they could deny a claim, and then it's he said, she said, and then people move on. Like it's really people move on. Like, I don't know the details and what's being reported on here that's causing all these issues.
The details are stupid, Gavin.
I was going to say they're probably stupid.
they're publicly, so I will summarize very high level, I guess, because this is all publicly available. It's shown up in like the ESPN reporter's article. This has been subject of the NASR statements. FC Cincinnati put out in some of their statements about what they were kind of hinting at disagreeing with. And I believe The Athletic had some reporting on it as well. So the high level details kind of across the board here is that the club didn't like and disagreed with the reporting that this reporter put out when they said that a player, Barrial, wanted to leave FC Cincinnati, but he enjoyed his time here. They didn't like that characterization.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yes.
So he thought positively of the club, but he wanted to leave.
The characterization of Barrial's departure that the club reported publicly differed from the interview that this reporter did with Barrial and Barrial's agent and family.
Oh, so Barrial, so the club were saying he enjoyed his time here and Barrial was saying
No.
Okay,
no.
Sorry, I'm getting
the club was saying, yeah, reverse. The club was like, oh, he's trying to force his way out. He doesn't want to be here. And then Barrial leaving was like basically saying, hey, I liked my time in Cincinnati. I really enjoyed the city. You know, I thought it was a great stop.
Okay, first of all, that is stupid.
Yeah,
because who cares if he liked it or not? The fans might care if he liked it or not, but like he's a player who came, he played really well, helped you guys win a trophy, and then he left. And now he's in what, South America, right?
Right, he's with Gremio.
Gremio.
Or wait, okay, with Cruzeiro.
Cruzeiro. Okay.
For whatever reason I was thinking of Suarez and I was like, "Oh yeah, Gremio." No. Yeah. Cruzeiro.
So he's moved on in his career. Whether he liked his time or not, whether he forced his way out or not, he could have done both, you know. He could, like, I'm speaking to FC Cincinnati here. He could have enjoyed his time at the club and also forced his way, a move, out to Cruzeiro because that is a higher level of competition than MLS, where they have all the, what's the high competition down there? Copa Sudamericana? Or is that the one below Copa Libertadores?
Yeah, Libertadores.
Mm-hmm. I think
Sudamerica is down there as well. But
yeah, I think that's like the Europa League equivalent to the Champions League. I think that's how it is. And then I could be totally wrong. Someone please correct me. And then, I mean, just Brazilian league as a whole is just a higher level. I think it's a really good move for his career. Both could be true.
Right. But two things can be true.
It's stupid. You're right.
Look, the details around his move and the history of it, I would say if you really want to get a good sense of it, go read the articles or go support this reporter. Laurel Failer is the reporter's name. So, and Gavin, maybe what we should do, we should probably put like a link in the, maybe in like the podcast description when we post this.
I'll just put it in the YouTube and then I'll put it in the description if I remember.
Yeah. So feel free to check out Laurel's work if you're an FC Cincinnati fan or if you just want to support her in this time of, I guess, the tribulation, if you will. It's a needless and pointless conflict, really. Completely pointless to have had this happen.
Yeah. But couldn't agree more.
I will tell you it's probably not fully exclusive to Cincinnati. I mean, MLS loves to shoot itself in the foot on just about every single different year in some major way. So,
yeah,
this isn't to say that. Typing, yeah,
if you hear me typing, I'm putting in Laura Filler's information on the live stream here.
Yeah, it's I believe she writes under Queen City Press, if you want to throw that on.
I'm linking her Twitter. Yeah. I'm just linking her Twitter profile.
But Laurel has done a lot of excellent reporting on the whole Barrial thing. So if you're curious about it, go, you know, she does a lot of great player features. She's done a lot of wonderful exposés. I know she wrote a ton about when Brenner left Cincinnati and there was plenty of good things to read there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I understand that the work that she has put out probably has not always won her friends in the front office of FC Cincinnati, but I think at the same time, the reporting is very thorough and gets a lot of different sides of the story that maybe a front office wouldn't necessarily want you knowing. So point being, though, this circles it all around, Gavin. I think ultimately, like, if you are a club, just accept that you're not going to be able to control what people write about you. And that's okay. People are allowed to have different opinions. They're allowed to tell different sides of the story. Sometimes you do things that make you look bad. And just like when a family member does that, sometimes you need to be called out by people close to you telling you, knock it off, you're being an idiot.
And like I said earlier, my interactions with clubs, when I was first starting out as a content creator, I attempted to get a couple interviews with clubs, including Orlando City, as well as other clubs. And most of them didn't reach back out, didn't respond. Orlando City did respond, and we got to the level of where I submitted my questions for the interview and never responded. I followed up 3 or 4 times via email, nothing. And the person still worked there. It's not like their email was, it was clear they still worked there. They were still on the website, that sort of thing. But they just stopped responding. The league as a whole is very picky with interviews and very closed circle. And, it's about imaging, which is how you started off this conversation, but I understand it to an extent, with the day and age we're in, but I think stay silent. And I think that's where Cincinnati really messed up here. The easier thing to do was just to stay silent. It was the worst decision to go public like this. It's pretty insane to me.
I feel like the easier... No, this isn't the easier thing. The way to stop this in the future, maybe, is to just be more transparent as organizations. And I recognize that will be very scary for MLS, who likes to tightly control their image and reduce any sort of risk of volatility or negative information. But I mean, ultimately, that's how you build awareness and brand appeal, is people build relationships with their teams, right? Like, let's talk about Coach Joe. Coach Joe, part of the podcast team, takes his child to NYCFC matches. Not even a year old. But that's going to be like growing up, assuming Coach Joe continues to take them there, and maybe NYC gets their new stadium, and like that's going to be core memories. And that's going to be a shared bonding experience. And like in good times and bad times, that's how that relationship is going to get strengthened. If you only ever give good times, like the second a bad thing comes around, fans are going to, peace out. They're going to say, whoa, I didn't know bad things can happen in this sport. Like, you don't want people who are going to be invested only as long as it's a good thing. Like, that's not a resilient organization. It's not an authentic organization either. So
I think it's a really good point. Yeah. Arsenal, our love overseas. Yep, you're literally wearing it right now.
Right. Been through a lot of bad times, Gavin. We've been through tons of bad times. Absolutely loads of them.
As a club, even not just like the team playing bad on the pitch, off the pitch, lots of turmoil, lots of some controversies, things like that.
Poor seasons. There was player drama. There was, front office turnover. There was negative attention in the media. And you know what?
Firing the staff. Remember, we fired a bunch of scouting staff and regular staff through COVID.
Yeah, so. We fired Gunnar Soares too.
Fired Gunnar Soares. Yeah. So, anyways, not the Arsenal podcast here at all. But I think the point I'm trying to make is that, well, really, I agree with your point that you have to go through the good times and the bad times to improve as an organization and as a league. And yeah. MLS is really trying hard to not go through those bad times at all.
Yeah. And I think they're going to miss out. You're better off for going through it. So we should get Ars Blog or Ars Cast.
Or on the MLS Now podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Arsenal Vision or something.
If an Arsenal player ever joins one of our teams, we'll do that. But I doubt
Maybe someday. Yeah. Maybe someday. You know, we had the chance when Arsenal versus MLS All-Stars happened. That was the golden opportunity.
Oh, yeah, it was. Oh, well, it is what it is. All right. Shall we get into the games?
I suppose we should. We can't talk about Arsenal or any of the Premier League teams since they're on break for the next 2 weeks, which is, side note, MLS is not on break for the next 2 weeks, and yet there's international matches going on, so.
Yeah, we talk about this every year. It's obnoxious. I know you clearly see why they have to do it with schedule, the fixture congestion, but
right,
it's annoying.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, that whatever. Fixture congestion is our own fault, though, as a league. So we created that problem.
Yeah, we sure did. And now we're trying to get out of that problem.
We're going to get out of the problem by eliminating one match? No way.
Yeah. Maybe they should, reduce the amount of games in the playoffs.
Oh.
What's the word I'm looking for? Well, anyways, that they increased. Just last year.
I feel like easier solution, Gavin, is to just add an extra month to the season when teams be playing in like the July, August time span. And then you could kind of string the season out a little bit more and not have the fixtures as congested.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, that July, August time period is sacred and could never have any sort of matches on it, though.
Never. We've got more important tournaments to play.
Right.
But we can't have a tournament running concurrently with the season. No.
Definitely not.
We can't have that.
Which is hilarious because in season this year you also have what is it? What tournament's happening in summer this year, like June, it's a huge thing.
Oh, the Euros.
No, all the South American teams that are coming here and playing. Yeah, Copa America. We're also having Copa in the U.S., and I've just totally blanked on it. Well, you know what? Hey, this isn't the Copa America podcast. That's not the Arsenal podcast. We're talking about everything other than MLS. This almost feels like an off-topic episode again. But
yeah,
okay, Gavin, let's get in. Yeah, let's get into the matches. You tried to direct us there, and I took us off topic, so I apologies for that.
Won't be the first time, won't be the last.
It might not even be the first or last time in this episode.
Probably. DC United 1, Inter Miami 3. Did you watch this match?
A messy-less Miami avoids a messy scenario.
I like that. Bravo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Go on the road and win.
An electrifying performance, some would say emblematic of DC current.
I thought DC played quite well.
They didn't do poorly. Gavin, I am going to admit, I'm mildly surprised that a Miami with no Messi played as well as they did. Because both of us were probably being somewhat bullish going into the season, being like, well, you know, when the old Barcelona friends aren't playing, like there's not going to be any impetus on teams to have to worry about like double marking Messi and like adjusting for, you know, his ability to find space and make passes. And it's going to take a lot of pressure off teams. And yet Miami were fine. Well, fine.
I mean, a 3-1 win on the road, definitely fine. Right. Red card helps.
A Suarez brace.
Yeah, So they have really strengthened their squad to the point where if they're down Messi, but they still have Busquets and Gomez and Redondo and Campana up there, they can still be competitive. Like, even without Messi, this first bunch of players, this first 13 of players, is a competitive team in this league. Like, hands down, it's competitive. It will be a playoff-level team. And when you're a playoff-level team, at a minimum, without Messi, when you're fielding all your top 13, 14 players,
you gotta beat DC United.
You're going to win. Yeah, you're going to beat DC United, even if you're on the road. And so they did that. They went on the road. They fought hard. And even though DC put up a good fight, they get a few goals, and they walk out 3-1 winners.
Yeah. So, and they stay,
I'm not
top
too
of the
surprised
league.
That, yes, they do. They have been
yeah.
very impressive this season, Inter Miami, with or without Messi. And they did not, well, not they did not release Messi, but Messi is out of the Argentina squad injured. So
we from will, the challenge that he suffered, apparently, in that Nashville match.
Is it really from that?
That's what they have publicly said. I still think that's his own fault, personally. Mm-hmm. I mean, like,
it's not a challenge.
I don't know. Yeah, he arrived extremely late after the player clears the ball. Like, yeah. I don't know what you expect the player to do after they've already, like, you don't get in the way. Like, if you jump in front of traffic, no one says that it's the car's fault for not stopping. They say,
exactly,
don't jump in front of traffic.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. But yeah.
That's good. That's going to annoy people.
It will. No,
we're going to start getting comments on the MLS Now feeds. They're going about Messi from all the fans.
Well, what did I say? If you think that's a red card, you lack ball knowledge. That was my tweet on the matter. It's never a red. It's never going to foul. But yeah, big comeback win for Inter Miami and Co. How long can they keep this up? That's the big question around this team, right? How long
it is
can
a big
Inter
question.
Miami keep this up before they start to lose players and start to ultimately come back down to earth?
I'll tell you what. I think at least for another month, looking at their schedule, because they've got home against New York City FC, followed by home against Colorado at the end of March and start of April. And you know what? If you don't get 6 points from that right now, the way those teams are playing, they also go away to New York Red Bulls, but that could be an issue, in fairness. Red Bull yeah. is a menace of a team.
I mean, yeah, Miami went away to Montreal and lost, so it's not like it's out of the realms of possibility, and they were Messi-less. And I think they had rotated for Champions Cup. So cool. All right. We'll scratch that down as another month, and then we'll revisit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to talk about the most unbelievable wild goal that I've seen in like 2 years? Or do you want to talk about how Montreal scored 3 goals?
I want to talk about how Montreal scored 3 goals. You know how my brain works.
Right. Well, two of them were penalties. And I'm going to tell you right now, Gavin, I don't think the first one was even a penalty.
Agreed. And that will be a consistent theme throughout this match in terms of the refereeing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, first goal, soft penalty. Second penalty, a little less soft penalty.
Yeah, that one is probably a fair penalty.
Yeah. Montreal, though, were playing pretty decent. I thought it was an even match. They got the penalty calls to go their way. And then I was really impressed, actually, in the second half with Courtois' substitutions and the little tweaks he made, because from the substitutions forward, Montreal were dominating the match. It was all Montreal. Before that, it was really all Chicago. And those changes that he made, I think 50th, 60th minute, changed the match. Montreal go and score a third goal. They're sitting pretty. Obviously, Chicago scored a goal in that time as well to make it 2-1 at the time. And before the changes, again, Chicago were all over them. And I don't know if you've seen those pictures as well, but the Chicago players pretty clearly offsides. And so that goes back to VAR, not having the lines, which I agree with, no lines, but we need better camera angles. I'm not sure why VAR wasn't able to catch that. It must have just been poor camera angles.
Which do you want, Gavin? Do you want camera angles or do you want goal line technology if you could only pick one?
Goal line technology.
Agree.
Because yeah. that is...
But that exists and they could do it. It's not magic.
But the good thing is, we can do both. It is possible.
No, Gavin, here's the thing. We can't even get teams to stop shooting themselves in their own feet with PR disasters. You expect us to do two things at once? No.
Who's the next club? Who's the next club? San Diego, right? Are they the next one? Or is it Vegas?
Yeah, next. San Diego comes in 2024. End of 2024, I believe.
So 2025?
Right.
Okay, sorry. So then take some of their expansion fee. What is it, 400, 300 million?
Like 400, I think.
Goal line technology and better camera angles.
No. Pick one.
It's just pause. Okay. Do you have anything that you wanted to add on the three goals for Montreal?
No, I'm ready to talk about the absurdity of a three goals in 10 minutes for Chicago, which I will say gave me a lot of optimism going into the weekend.
Yes. So did you see the red card that was given? I'm sure you have by this point.
Suspect red card.
Suspect, controversial, any of those types of words will define this red card for Raheem Edwards. Mm-hmm. When I tell you I'm watching the game on my phone, I'm on the couch at home, watching the game on my phone, and I see a cross go in or whatever, and the ball goes out for whatever, and I'm like, okay, just another attack, whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're doing replays and whatnot, and they cut to the ref, and he's pulling out a red card. And I'm like, oh, what happened? And the ref never went to the monitor, so I don't think that's following correct process, unless it was called on the field.
I believe it was a second yellow is the reason why, Gavin.
No, it was a straight red. Well, okay, maybe I didn't see it, but I think it was a straight red, not a second yellow for Edwards. And I'll look just to make sure.
You can fact check yourself. I thought it was a second yellow because I believe that's why there was so much controversy over it, because you can't do anything about second yellows.
No, I'm looking at his stats and it says fouls committed one. I'll have to check to be sure. But anyways, the replay is Raheem Edwards getting pushed in the back and then flailing his arm out after being pushed in the back. So he gets pushed. He regains himself. He doesn't like fly down or anything. And he just like gives a little bit back. He throws an arm out. Doesn't connect with the head. He just flails an arm out. And I don't know if either the sideline ref caught it or VAR caught it. I don't know what happened. Straight red card, I believe. Maybe it's a second yellow, but I think it was a straight red based on the video footage. And Raheem Edwards is off. And I'm like, oh. Because when I'm watching...
And he came on as a sub.
Yeah. When I'm watching, I'm like, oh, what happened? No replays of the incident. Zero replays of the incident, which kind of aligns with that leaked memo. Even though we still get replays pretty consistently. So no replays of the incident. And then Chicago have a penalty. And I'm like, okay. So I rewind like minutes back and I'm like, did VAR tell him to do this? Like,
you're getting all emotional there, Gavin.
Yeah. Did VAR tell him to do this? Like, what's happened? And I'm like staring at Raheem Edwards, and finally I see the little pfft, and I'm like, are you kidding me? That's the red card.
It's not worth sending off
10 to 12 times a game. Like, what? Someone pushes
weird.
I'm going to give him a little bit back.
Gavin, if I recall correctly, you get red cards almost every single week your indoor league.
I've gotten a red card one time.
Two yellows, though.
No, that one was a straight red. But yeah, so I was just dismayed by the call. to give him a red card. Completely changes the match with the penalty as well. And then Chicago go ahead and get the third goal, which is a good play by them. And I'll let you give your thoughts on the fourth goal first.
It's a physics teacher's unbelievable, perfect scenario that they're going to go write a test question about this and be like, Kellen Acosta, Kellen Acosta is standing 65 yards away from a goal and kicks a ball at a 55 degree angle, leaving his foot at 37 miles per hour. If the wind is blowing east at 40 miles an hour, how far will the ball travel and what will be the final vector and destination of the ball upon reaching the ground?
Back of the freaking net. Okay.
Yeah.
Crazy goal. I went
with an assist. I went from Brady.
Yeah. I literally went, oh shit. Like mm-hmm. I was going crazy on my couch, but
yep.
Okay. Let's be honest.
I had friends over at the time, Gavin, and none of us understood correctly what was happening. Because we were all standing around making light conversation about how this was an insane comeback by Chicago to come back 3-3 after being down 3-1. Mm-hmm. And then just like the final moment of the game, all of us just stood there like, what did we just watch?
Yeah. Insane. Insanity. Goalkeeper. The
unfortunate
Montreal goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I'm trying to formulate my thoughts.
I will formulate the thought for you. No.
Really?
Gavin, have you seen the angles of how much that ball like moves in the air?
Yeah, it does go like near.
Every golfer is going to watch this and be like, I wish I could shape, you know, my shot off the tee box like that. And have that kind of control and curve on a ball. It's unbelievable how much that ball moves.
I mean,
we talk about insane. Like the Ronaldo knuckleball, right? Mm-hmm. Where the ball kind of moves and shifts in the air and it makes it hard for the keeper. Like this is a ball up way high in the air, moving from 40 mile an hour winds.
But the keeper's legs are planted to the spot. And I think if he's moving his legs, you know, doing the old high knee shuffle, I think he's able to move backwards a couple inches and make that 1 point saving save. Like I think some of it has to be on the keeper there. He is just planted.
That's my only criticism. On the keeper. It's a freak 65-yard shot.
Extremely freakish. Yeah, it was insane. I love it. The Windy City Wonder Goal is what I will always refer to that as, because man, oh man, was that insane. But I put a little bit down to the keeper, and I did just check. Raheem Edwards got a straight red. It was not a second yellow.
Mind-boggling.
So Montreal fans can feel really, really aggrieved. I think Montreal have been very good this season. In every game I've seen, I've been impressed. Mm-hmm. And I did actually want to ask you about, I know we're spending a lot of time here on this match in particular, but it was a big match, but Courtois is being built up as the next big MLS coach already.
He's going to be the next Wilfred Nancy.
Well, he's playing a very similar system.
Think about where he was previously.
Yep. He is being billed as the next, new coach to come into the league and take the league by storm. And very unlucky to come out of this game with a loss, but I thought his team yet again looked pretty impressive, especially being 3-1 up on the road.
Honestly, I would say not getting at least a point, let alone getting all three of them, is just horrendous luck on the part of Montreal.
Especially with an offside goal, very soft penalty. It was like, you know, soft penalty for both teams. And then
that one was a wash.
The insane goal to death. Just, it was a crazy, crazy game. So we can come off this, but a match to remember, a match to remember for sure.
Absolutely. Keep your eyes out on Montreal this season. All right. Agreed. Well, Gavin, we're going to I'm going to make up some time on this next one, Seattle versus Colorado. Worth noting, there were two red cards on Seattle. So if you want, Rui Diaz and Atencio both sent off.
Was that after the game?
Rui Diaz was at the 90th minute.
Oh, okay. Okay. I switched by that time.
We all did.
Yeah.
Which is why, as far as I'm concerned, Kevin Cabral still has not scored a goal.
He's got one. He got the very important one.
Mm-hmm. He sure did.
Yeah, Colorado can actually feel disappointed, and we do have I remembered late, but I remembered to do Correspondent Corner, and we do have a response here from Nick at Nick Holmberg 11. Here's his Correspondence Corner. He's our Rapids correspondent. He says it's a great sign for Colorado Rapids fans to be upset with a draw at Seattle and to be seventh in the West after the way we've performed this season. Shoulda, coulda, woulda won it, but a little more sharpness and rhythm, and this team can go places. The big thing is the missed penalty from Mihailovic. Like you said, Cabral does get a goal right at the death to make it 1-1 with Seattle down to 10 men. It was, I believe, a red card worthy challenge from Atencio. I didn't see the Rui Diaz one, so I can't speak to it. But I agree with everything Nick says there, that it is a great sign for the Rapids to be a little disappointed at this point in the season, because last season, obviously, they were trash.
Are alarm bells ringing for you if you're a Seattle supporter?
Yeah, yeah.
So Bela Vega's out for, what, 6 more weeks?
I don't know exactly. I don't, but it's a while.
Yeah, I mean, he's out for a good bit of time. They have Atencio and Rui Diaz on red cards, which, I mean, Rui Diaz going 90 minutes is impressive in and of itself, given his previous seasons. And I would say questions about if he still has the ability to go 90. Well, he didn't have to. He went exactly 90 in this one. He got sent off in the 90th. So,
yep. He didn't really impact the game all that much other than he scored the penalty.
Other than the goal.
Yeah.
Scored a goal in the 11th minute, but
yeah. So, but yes, alarm bells are ringing for me for Seattle. It's been a disappointing start to the season. They haven't been in Champions Cup. They haven't had that excuse. And it's just a bit of transition for this team. And I'm not as impressed with their attackers. Obviously, we just spoke to Rui Diaz. He hasn't been very impactful these last few seasons. But even Roldan, Morris, Chu, they're not at that.
They're not consistent, is what they are.
In MLS.
On their day, Leo Chu, great player. Jordan Morris, great player. But the problem is if you're relying on them every single week to have a great day, it's just not going to happen.
If we're ranking players like in a tier on their average game, not their best game, what they could be, but on their median game, I think these are like C level attackers. B minus to C level attackers in the league, like very average, can do a job sort of thing. And I think that's where Seattle are struggling a lot right now. It's because they have way too many of those players who are just putting in mid performances pretty consistently up front.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
Agree. I'm ready to move on to talk about the tragedy that is New York City FC getting a win, which does secure Nick Cushing's spot as head coach for the rest of the season and potentially next season as well. As you know, one win equals one season contract extension. Those are the rules. I don't make them, but those are the rules. So it's, I think, quite surprising to me that the first goal that Toronto conceded all season came at the hands of the, what I would call at the time, the worst team in the East.
Well, to be fair, they weren't playing like it, NYCFC. They were really good this game. Their pressing was effective. I think Toronto played into that a bit. They kept trying to play through the middle. The few times that they played direct and over the top, you know, one of them, they got a goal from it straight up. Marshall Ruddy running in behind, getting onto the ball and scoring. And, you know, I was watching thinking, yeah, Toronto are looking good if they're going to play this direct. But then they started going short pass into the middle, and NYCFC were picking them off time and time and time again. NYCFC had all the momentum, and Toronto just didn't change anything. So I was really disappointed to see that from Toronto, especially because I was a quasi-Toronto fan in this game due to the amount of money I had placed, or I could have earned from them.
But as was I.
Here nor there.
As was I.
And I told you, remember when we were talking last week, I said the one match I would be eyeballing is that Toronto NYCFC. That's Yankee Stadium tax for you right there.
Yeah.
But no, NYCFC played really well in this match. I want to give them all the credit in the world. And I mean, that first goal from Santi Rodriguez was, it was beauty. It was an absolute beauty.
Yeah. I would say you and I think we talked about this match live. We were texting about it, not phone calling about it, but we were texting about it. And the thing that stood out to me as well was just Toronto looked horrific in the midfield. And maybe, you know, you can chalk that up to the Yankee Stadium tax. Teams play more narrow there. The field doesn't feel quite right. It plays a little differently. But like, they got a goal from Marshall Ruddy early in the match and then just decided to go away from that. It was very discouraging to me because Toronto all season have looked very composed and pretty on the ball, if you will, as far as tactics and how to break a team down. And it seems like they just went away from that for no reason in this match. I very much question what went wrong here because it looked like they had an idea. And then by the time the game ended, you could have added 30 minutes on and they wouldn't have scored. At no point in time did they even look like they were threatening.
They were up a man as well. And yeah, just
honestly,
couldn't agree more.
New York looked like they were the ones up a man at certain points, which is the most wild part about it. Like, how do you play up a man and still look lost in possession?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know because it's got to be harder to play up a man in Yankee Stadium versus other because you can't stretch them width-wise because of the dimensions of the pitch. But Toronto weren't even trying. They continuously played through the middle. And even NYCFC down to 10 men were clogging up that middle and able to get onto those loose touches, loose passes, and create transition opportunities. Eventually, you know, they drop deeper. But yeah, it was a really disappointing performance from Toronto and a really promising one from New York City FC.
Yep. I am not fully reset on my priors for NYC. I need to see multiple
more than
weeks.
Just Toronto.
Yeah. a woeful Toronto. A Toronto that looked a lot like end of last season, which is, again, questionable for me. But they looked pretty good in all their matches prior to this. So I'm going to give this one as a one-off for Toronto, and I'm going to give this one as a one-off for NYC as well. This is just one of those weird MLS matches that happens.
Okay. We'll revisit it.
We will revisit. Instead, though, we're going to go staying in the East, Columbus 3 over New York Red Bulls 0.
I mean, the big question around Columbus right now is, will they become the new best team ever in MLS in terms of points on the board? You know, we saw New England do it. I think we saw Atlanta do it, right? Atlanta broke the record. Or no, it was LAFC who broke the record. And then I think, Toronto before them. Like, we've had a lot of record-breaking seasons over the past 6 to 7 years recently. Are we going to see
it's
again
a long,
with Columbus?
It's a long season, Gavin. And we've seen that teams that are very high-flying, going into especially Leagues Cup, drop off very hard post-Leagues Cup. As well, Columbus still has Champions Cup I believe they got a bye through the first round because they were the winners of MLS Cup. So it's not like they've even been in the same amount of matches that other Champions Cup teams have been in. So yeah, I'm not sold that this is going to be a record setting year for them because there's just so many other matches for them to play still. But
okay. I'm here for that.
Side note, Cucho is top striker in the league? Question mark. Like, from an all around skill set, ability to finish, way that he links up play, way that he distributes the ball, finds creative passes, and also still has the quality to make unbelievable shots.
I think, yeah, it's him. Giacomakis is another name on the radar. Carranza.
I'd give you Giacomakis, but I don't know if I'm in on Carranza yet. I don't know if I'd give you Carranza right now. Carranza's
so good, I don't know what you're talking about.
He's good, but like from an all-around ability, Cucho is unbelievable.
You got to call out Suarez as well. Just Suarez being Suarez. But to answer your question, yes, he is, again, with that sort of tier maker for strikers in this league, he's an A. And he's solidly in that top tier.
Yeah, I still think he goes back to Europe.
I don't think he goes mid-season, though. I know we talked about it earlier this season, but yeah. I don't think he goes this season. But yeah, anyways, Columbus in complete control over the Red Bulls at home. That's nothing new. I don't think there's anything too surprising there. Red Bulls had no answer on the night, though. 3 shots, 2 on target, and they looked frustrated in this match, eventually getting a red card at the death. And who can blame them? Columbus are a really good team, and they didn't even get close.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a whole lot more else to say other than just Columbus were far and away the better team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's all we can say, right? So props to them. They're a really impressive bunch. And, man, is Aiden Morris just blossoming into one of the best players in the league. It's great to see.
Also going to Europe,
yep.
May go to Europe at the same time as Cucho.
End of the season, yep.
Never know. Sometimes when the price is right and when the option is there, I think if you're a player and you just saw this winter window, you take it in the summer. Because I think you have to know that the opportunities between summer and winter are growing increasingly different.
That's true. If the opportunity pops up, he's going to want to go. I mean, again, I know we've talked about this before. Look at Brandon Vasquez, yada, yada. So,
yeah,
fair enough. All right.
Gavin, I'm so excited to talk about this next one. You know why, too. You can see the teams.
Is it
Dallas-Vancouver?
Oh, okay. I was thinking of a different game.
No, Gavin, Vancouver. You know that I'm a Vancouver stan, secretly.
Yes. Sorry, I'm getting the sneeze sensation. Oh.
Stop that.
I know.
Don't sneeze.
I didn't. I stopped it. I did exactly what you said.
Excellent.
Boss.
Wonderful work.
This game is the reason I didn't win my 3-leg against you this week. I had Dallas at home.
I don't know why you would ever. I cannot believe you would ever bet against Vancouver. Okay, so
Dallas was a plus at home. You have to understand. You have to understand.
I get that, Gavin. And normally I would agree with you. You take all pluses at home, but you know I can't bet against Vancouver.
Your favorite
team. I just can't. Yeah.
Well, you did text me during this match, and you were just like, Vancouver are running rampant right now. So that tells me you watched a bit of this match.
I watched a lot of this match, Gavin.
All right, take it away.
I what do you want to know? I mean, like, Brian White had a fantastic goal. Like, it was there were multiple extremely well-worked goals. Brian White, I really liked that goal. I like Brian White as a player. I think he is a good player that I think would be even better on a different team, but I'm glad he's on Vancouver because he gives some joy to that team. I had some concerns going into this match, though, because I thought maybe Sartini's tactics weren't going to work this year. And we do this every year where we're like, Sartini's not getting it done. His tactics are stale, or he's been figured out. And then they just kind of click mid-season. And Vancouver, in many matches prior to this, looked like they just didn't have that cohesiveness. They didn't seem to know where each other were going to be. They didn't seem to know how to move with the ball once they got into the final third. Like, they would be surprised that they would get there. They didn't look like that this time. Like, they were decisive. They took their opportunities. I mean, it's a 3-1 Fafa Picot. I swear you should just, like, make him an anytime goal scorer, anytime that he's going to play against a former team of his, because I feel like he always scores on his former teams.
Literally every single time.
Yeah, like, shockingly high consistency. To the point that the next time they play against Dallas, I might have to throw a flyer on a Fafa anytime goal scorer. Or against Nashville, for that matter. If Vancouver plays against Nashville this year, I'm going to throw a Fafa anytime goal scorer in there. So, yeah, I mean, it's... And Gavin, you know what I loved about this? All three of these goals were scored by someone who is not named Ryan Gold.
Yeah. Scored or assisted. Am I right in saying that? Yeah. He didn't score or assist in this match. I think a lot of the supporting cast are stepping up more than usual with this Vancouver team so far to start the season. Raposo has looked like a different player in the bits and pieces I've seen of him. He's just looked a complete upgrade than what he has been in the past. Picot is obviously new and been very good in this system, as well as improvements from like Schopf, who's a fantastic player coming over from Europe, I believe. And so just the supporting cast, I think, are improving. And that's just raising the level and allowing them to be much more competitive than they were towards the tail end of last season. And this is all without Krylock starting.
Yeah, and once again, I still remember years back the wonder duo of Krylock and Ruznak on RSL. And it was like, if you were playing, say, Fantasy MLS, you just took both of them and you may not win. You're like, they may not have won, right? RSL may not have won that week, but somehow they would still combine for like 20 something points between them, regardless of a win or a loss.
Yeah, they were there. They were RSL's entire offense those years.
Yeah, yep. They were RSL. So yeah, and I'm honestly very excited to see once Krylock is fully settled and integrated, what happens, because Vancouver seemed to have been missing that steady presence up front. I hear an animal getting sick behind you, Gavin.
That's my old dog, King. Let's see if I can get him in shot.
Oh, nope, you can't look like him. It.
You can see his butt. He's like 15 years old. He coughs sometimes.
That's quite old for a dog.
Yes, but we love him all the same.
Right. Maybe even more so, because he's got 15 years of love to give.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Shall we move on now that we've received the signal from the dog?
No, just quickly. Okay. Sorry.
All right. All right. We have to ignore the dog signal. Go ahead.
Dallas have been an extremely disappointing season thus far. Have been an extremely disappointing team this season thus far. Okay. So I just want to call that out. I mean, they started with Ferreira, Areola, Musa up top, and you'd think that's a really dangerous front three. And
is it?
They carried no threat. I mean, Musa's a big signing for them. They spent decent money on him this offseason. DP number 9, I'm pretty sure. And Areola, Ferreira, Musa, that's the front they want to go with. I mean, they would love Velasco. Is he even still on the team, or is he just injured all the time? Like, we don't hear a lot about Velasco anymore. I think just because he's always injured. So, anyways, really disappointed in Dallas's performances this season thus far. Just have to agree. Call that out.
Is Nico Estevez on the hot seat?
Based on last season's performance and the start of this season, I think people will start looking at that and thinking. And he'll have some time to get this right. as all coaches should, but I think he's on the watch list for this season. I'll say he's on the watch list for sure.
Hey, you want to stay on the watch list, on the fraud watch list, and talk about Josh Wolf with Austin FC versus Philadelphia?
Yeah, let's do it.
Josh Wolf, fraud watch list. Thoughts?
I thought this was a positive game for them overall, actually, because it started poorly. They battled back, fought hard, got to 2-1, and then at the end, they lost it again. Got back to 2-2. Yes, he's absolutely on the watch list.
Some might say they are lucky to have got a point from this match, the way that the momentum was swinging.
At the end, yeah, for sure, yeah. But overall, it's a good point for them, but where they were a couple seasons ago to where they are now is a huge, drastic decline. Drastic decline.
Yeah, they're sitting in 12th, 3 points from 4 matches. That's not very good for those of you at home doing the math. That is below 1 point per game. That's not good at all. So it's 0.75.
A draw at home to Philadelphia isn't a terrible thing. It's not terrible. But put with the rest of their games this season and end of last season, it's just a continuing trend of meh from them. So I don't have much more to add.
I don't have a whole lot more to add. Philadelphia were woeful during their time in Champions League. And I don't think Philadelphia is... We think of Philadelphia as a team that is built really deep, right? And yet they seem to struggle when they have multiple competitions.
I don't think they're that deep.
Yeah.
Why would you say they're a deep team? I think they're no deeper than any other MLS team.
I think because historically they've had a lot of very good, promising young talent that they can call up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at, especially say, like in the COVID times when they had players that were out due to COVID and they called up academy guys and got results with academy players. And you're thinking to yourself, holy smokes, like Philadelphia can just keep calling up players, similar to Seattle, where they could just keep calling up players like, oh, we're in the Champions League and it's the finals and we lost Joao Paulo to an ACL. Well, we're just going to put in 16-year-old Obed Vargas, and look, we did it. We won the Champions League. 16-year-old.
Yeah, I think Philadelphia have clearly, you know, those kids that they were calling on are now full fledged first teamers, and they haven't backfilled, and that's where the deepness has gotten a little bit more shallow. Unfortunately, Sullivan is playing key minutes for them now. McGlynn is playing key minutes for them now. And who's the other one? There's one more. Those were the two youngsters who were, you know,
Aronson
in and out. Paxton. Yeah. Is he gone?
I think he's gone.
I think, he got picked up, I think. But, so I agree with that. Yeah. They're not deep anymore. I think it's a fine result for both teams, given both teams' circumstances.
Yeah, I would say it's a good sign of life for Philadelphia. They're not, I mean, look, they're still in 13th place in the East. Like, they would have loved to have got a win because it would have put them much higher up the table. But, I mean, you got to turn the momentum at some point, and they're going from being kind of in a rut to looking like they're knowing what they're doing again. So now I would expect them to maybe do better this coming week, and I would expect to get 3 points if you're Philadelphia personally. So
fair.
All right, shall we move on to talk about Minnesota versus LAFC? New coach for Minnesota, new look, because they're getting wins over the standard bearer for the Western Conference. Anytime that you can shut out LAFC is a good win. Anytime you can shut out LAFC and win is a good win.
Yes. I would say LAFC's attack aren't the same force that they were in years past.
I would agree with you.
So that's, but it's still good to shut out a team with that sort of quality. I'll just start it off with this. Again, Correspondent Corner from Maddie. She said, all I got to say about Minnesota is 10 points in 4 games, baby. Who's laughing now?
Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota's laughing all the way to the top. Yeah. So it's great to see. They played well. And Reynoso came off the bench. So that's a big storyline for them. But of course, what you called out, the biggest storyline of all is the new head coach getting the first mm-hmm. win at home. And things are looking up for the Loons.
Hey, you know, I said this during the match, but I really just want to call out big respect to Steve Cherundolo. He, you know, really took this one with grace, was not blaming the really atrocious, horrid weather that was present in Minnesota. There were flurries of snow at this match. And I mean, I know that it's a disgrace to have any snow or any precipitation in soccer when an LA team is playing, especially LAFC, but good on Steve Cherundolo to really just say, hey, we're troopers and we're going to pull through this 34 degree weather with flurries. So
big respect. Ridiculous. You're ridiculous, man. I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah. LAFC going to just keep an eye on them. They're not the same beast they are. No. They were last season. So
we said this going in. Yep. Is this what you expected LAFC to look like when we went into the season? Thinking about how much they were losing in the way of leadership, in the way of non-returning players, in the way of new players. I mean, there's a lot of dynamic. Like, this is what you had in mind?
Exactly this. Yeah. They would still be a good team, but like, the way they started the season, I think, fooled me a little bit. And I don't want to, you know, go too far on this end either, just with this loss. But I'm starting to see signs of they're not the force they once were, just due to all those transitions. Yeah, I think that this is more what I was expecting. The more inconsistent back and forth. Some games are really good. They dominate. They score goals like they always do. Oh, now they're on the road, looking rough, not really dominating. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see this season. They're definitely one to look out for.
I agree. I could not have said anything in addition to that. I'm going to move us on, Gavin. We're going to talk about Kansas City or San Jose. Kansas City putting a little bit of barbecue action on San Jose. We said this going into the weekend. Always bet against NYCFC and San Jose, and apparently also the Revs is the three teams that you're supposed to always bet against now, based on
currently
our very, very scientific method. We were right on this one. Kansas City with a win over San Jose. I was a little nervous at first because San Jose did take that early lead, and then Kansas City kind of eliminated that in short order. Another two goals coming for Kansas City, basically right off the bounce, where, you know, by the end of the half, like, San Jose, you're probably looking at it and like, God, like, what are we going to do? Like, when are we going to get a win? And it's not today, for the record. So, thoughts on that outside of it?
I thought San Jose looked decent for a decent bit of this game, but they just couldn't put it all together. That, like, they had moments of quality. They had moments where they would get shots off. They did pretty decent in terms of keeping the ball, keeping possession, getting to the final third at times. But, like, they just didn't have that conviction. They didn't have that final it factor. And that's what I feel like I'm missing a lot from San Jose right now, is they have the juice to get to the top of the field. But then there's nothing more than that. There's no ideas. There's no conviction. There's no individuality. usually it only has to come from, usually it comes from Christian Espinoza whenever it does come. I didn't see the first goal. I think it was Vitor who scores it. It wasn't Espinoza. But I don't know if Vitor he got the assist. I can't speak to this goal in particular, but, I'm just seeing here Espinoza did get the assist. So usually he's involved, you know, he's the team may not win, but Espinoza will get a goal or an assist.
San Jose are going to be like, they're going to be the soccer version of the Angels, where it'll be like, Espinoza got a goal and an assist and ran 10 and a half kilometers, a feat not seen since 1978 with the NASL, leading San Jose for shots on goal as they lost to Kansas City 2-1.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it's going to work for them. Yeah. So no, good win for SKC. You gotta beat San Jose at home in their current state. And, that's all I really got on this one.
Yeah, San Jose are still looking for their first win. Got a feel for San Jose right now.
Spoon contenders for sure.
Yeah, we'll talk about the other spoon contenders here in like probably 15 to 20 minutes. But before that, we're going to talk about Houston Portland. Finally, our preconceived notions about a scoreless Portland going into this season against Houston, who I think both of us were high on Houston going into this season as well. So this match felt like a confirmation bias match where neither of these teams have really been performing the way that we thought they would this season. But for this one week, it panned out how we said it would at the start of the season. So I'm kind of filing this one under the same thing as I filed NYCFC in Toronto under, where this is that one kind of weird match for me.
It was very, it's actually pretty back and forth. And, you know, Portland should have had at least a goal in this match, if not two. And, you know, you can say that for both teams, probably. You can say Houston should have had goals, but like, Portland created enough to get a goal in this match, and it probably should have been a draw. And Portland have been clinical this season, so was surprised to see them not be clinical in this match. Away from home, variants, whatever. Like, it happens. And then Houston just, they had some variants go their way with the goal they scored. You know, the goalkeeper and the players collide, and the ball bounces out straight to Aliyu, who jumps on it and scores, like, whatever. But overall, those were the moments of the match. Houston get through without letting in a goal, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I like that you brought up variance on this one, because variance is kind of the ultimate enemy and ally in this sport. When you have a relatively low scoring sport like soccer, I mean, for a vast majority of these matches, I mean, we had three goals, two goals, four goals, three goals. Like, it's not like this is a huge high scoring sport where you're expecting nonstop action and for teams to generate lots of scoring opportunities. Like, sometimes you generate, there'll be teams that get like 0.6 XG, right? Like, they take four shots and they get four goals. And they may not have even necessarily been good shots. Like, you would say most of the time, they don't even score one goal. Sometimes you do tons of work and you don't get a goal at all, though. And that's just kind of the name of the game in this sport, is you can do everything right. Sometimes it doesn't matter. So,
well, I'll say this. I think SKC, last match we were talking about, I think they only had five shots on the night. And San Jose had like 13. So yeah, it's definitely not just shots. So I want to call that out as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of stats in soccer, and a lot of these stats are sometimes misleading in how much weight is put into them.
Agreed. 100% agree.
Shall we move on to Nashville, Charlotte?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Nashville fans rejoicing, surely.
First win of the season for them?
Yes, first win of the season. You are correct in saying that. Yep. Three draws leading up finally to a win. They're still undefeated.
I would expect nothing less from the boys in gold.
Yeah, I mean, still completely in the conversation with teams that have given up no losses, but good on them, I guess, for finally getting a win. Sam Surridge is on the score sheet finally. He was out for a while with the injury and taking some precautions not to rush him back, and finally on the score sheet, putting away Dean Smith's side and Charlotte, who had been playing fairly well this season. I'm not sure, again, how much to take away from this, though, because we know how Gary Smith plays, by and large. So, yeah. I want to be so optimistic for Nashville on this and be like, look, everything's coming up Nashville. Like,
they've been good recently.
Yeah. Well, still better. No goals. Yeah. An Alex Moyle goal is shocking. You don't that's not on anyone's bingo card most of the time for a weekend. And then the Sam Surridge goal, you hope you see more of that. But, you know, if you can get a consistent goal scorer and get a random player to contribute every once in a while, you'll be fine. So,
yeah. I don't have much more to add. I only caught the closing stages of this match, where it was kind of like Charlotte was pushing and Nashville were holding on. And Charlotte, I mean, for the last 15 minutes, from what I saw, they were really pushing. Nashville were doing the Nashville thing, sitting deep and holding on, and Charlotte were pushing, but they just couldn't break that defense. So
yeah,
but, I mean, that's all I got.
Like I said, we know what Gary Smith does. I don't want to take too much. I don't want to overreact to it. So.
And I can't say Nashville versus Charlotte was the most appealing match of the weekend.
No, it absolutely was not. I will say the appealing match of Saturday, at least, comes up in this next one for LA Galaxy versus St. Louis City. This actually was one of the appealing matches for me on the day, and it didn't disappoint. Six goals between the two teams, ending as a 3-3 draw. I will tell you, I actually had Galaxy in my mind as a surefire lock to win this at home. And
before the match, I would have agreed with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Galaxy have been disappointing me recently with their locks. And so maybe I need to reset my priors on just how good they are this season, because I've had a couple matches where I think they should be winning that. Yep. And they haven't been doing that. And this was another one of those. But maybe that's also a reset on priors of St. Louis, who played really well in this match.
They did play really well. They looked up again. I think for you and I, we think of St. Louis still not as this mid-block team, right? We think of this team that's pressing all the time, energy drink soccer. They're going to burn themselves out by the time late parts of the match roll around, 75th minute beyond. There's nothing much left in the tank. They're just trying to hold on, running on fumes, and teams can pick them apart. And, I mean, St. Louis got what? Granted, they got an own goal in the 88th minute, but I mean, it's an own goal happens not because your other team took pity on you and kicked it into their own net. That's still ultimately something that you generally have to force to happen. So
yeah.
St. Louis stayed competent. Unfortunate for them that they give up a late stoppage time equalizer, but again, going in, I thought this was going to be a win for sure. So I think a point away to Galaxy, especially given how they've looked lately, is probably acceptable for most teams.
Yeah, I agree. Really,
I made a really long correspondence corner for this one.
That's what I'm pulling up right now. Okay, yeah. So Who is this from? You didn't tell me who this was from.
It's from our St. Louis correspondent. It is, you can find, it's Tyler Santh. It's on STL Footy on Twitter.
Yep. Okay. I just want to make sure it was him and not
yep.
someone else who you knew from St. Louis. Okay. So no. Tyler says, Carnell is getting better at his job after an entire 2023 where he would hesitate to disrupt the game plan. This week's road trip saw 4 out of 5 substitutions made with at least 20 minutes to go, and they paid off in spades. Confidence for the main man off the field is proving just as valuable as for the ones on it. Offseason additions are showing their worth. Thomas Totland is making it clear every time he sets foot on the field that he's just a darn good defender. I love that. Chris Durkin has been called upon early to fill some big shoes in the midfield and settled in nicely to a rotation. And Deer's minutes on Saturday were absolutely critical, neutralizing Paint Sill's relentless speed and tenacity. Deer needs to get match fit as soon as possible. It's not all sunshine and roses, though. The fan favorite Joel Klaus still seeks that elusive first goal. He's playing deeper, and Sam Adeniran is reaping the benefits. But in a 6-goal draw, you'd expect at least one from a forward. On one hand, he's shown some skill as a facilitator, but on the other hand, season 2 should be about building upon last season's foundations, not retooling a key player's skill set. I agree with most of that, and that just that last part. We're still early in the season for Joel Klaus, and he has looked really pretty good in this role, but I could see a world where him and Adeniran really work well together, as they have, I think, this season. And once they finally like really get comfortable with both of their roles, we could see that be a key partnership for St. Louis down the stretch.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you on that one. We've seen previously in MLS quite a number of partnerships develop as the season goes on. So I would say it's almost even more expected to me than anything else that you're going to start slow when changes like this are happening. And then you get to, I don't know, maybe let's say like late April, early May, and you should be roughly hitting your stride around that time. Like if you're still not seeing something, then maybe start to read into it and say, hey, maybe this isn't working. But
right. Yep.
Yeah. This is early season. It's the learning time.
Yep. Let's move on.
All right. We're going to move on to New England Revolution versus FC Cincinnati. Cincinnati getting a win on the road. Gavin, if I told you that FC Cincinnati have 2 wins and 2 draws, could you guess what the split of points earned between home and away is?
I would guess more to the home split, but I know that's not the case.
You are correct. That is not the case. Cincinnati with 2 draws at home and 2 wins on the road. So completely in reverse to what anyone would expect normally. It's a real issue because I've been in the stadium for both those draws and it's very frustrating.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I mean, Cincinnati looked, I will just say it as it appeared to me on the television screen. They looked listless. They looked completely without direction. There was zero creativity in the midfield. Like the fans were begging on social media and in chat rooms. And I was one of them for changes at halftime. And you almost never see Noonan make changes at halftime. He made 2 changes at halftime in this one. So this is one of those instances where like, it was so incredibly obvious what the issues were for Cincinnati that even an extremely sub-conservative coach like Noonan made the changes early. And it paid off. Like Cincinnati scored 2 goals. Like they scored almost immediately. It was pulled back for offsides because, you know, Santos was like 7 or 8 inches offside, but, you know, came back from an offside position. Goal was ruled out because he was the first one to touch the ball after coming back from an offside position. You know, that is what it is. Like, don't be offside. Like when you're that close to midfield, like he was barely over the midfield line and most of New England was end of Cincinnati's half. So just be on your side of the field and you would have been fine. Point being, that was indicative of what was to come, because then Cincinnati went on to score two more goals and they looked really, really just unbelievably good. So anyways, then after they scored that, they looked terrible. So I wouldn't necessarily, so terrible might be an over exaggeration here, but like, they had this really, really wonderful, excellent idea of how they wanted to play, and it just, like, it kind of went away. It got very nervy, needlessly, in the last probably 20 to 25 minutes. They let Santos basically passed the ball backwards to Vrioni, cutting out every single FC Cincinnati defender. Masterful pass from Sergio Santos to give the assist to the New England striker. I mean, completely avoidable, but just an awful mistake to give New England some hope, and they really pressed in on it. Ultimately, I mean, Cincinnati stayed extremely stout defensively. Like, they've now conceded, what, two goals on the season, and one of them was a PK, and this other one was on a horrific defensive error from a player. So, I mean,
still on track for breaking the record, as you called out a couple weeks ago.
Really, just they continue to look solid defensively, but I am not going to speak too highly of it yet.
Can you verify this? So maybe not verify. I don't want to say that. But
I can verify it, yes. Verifying
corner,
right now.
Correspondent corner.
Confirmed.
Matt Glenn, Revs fan. He says, Revs, so much talent in the team, and Vrioni has started to show the potential to be dangerous in the final third. Revs would be in an even worse position if they didn't have such strong center backs. The wait for Bai and Barrero to bring more strength to the wings to return is agonizing. Does that fit from what you saw at the weekend?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, they definitely looked tentative defensively. I don't know how much of that, though, I chalk up to being now a Caleb Porter team. My opinion on Porter is quite low, personally. I know many people around the league have a generally low opinion of most Porter coach teams, though, so I may not be alone in that. There are certainly some encouraging signs in that, you know, for the defensive error of Santos, like, Vrioni still had to finish that, right? And you combine that with Carlos Heel, who continues week in and week out to look like a really just excellent player. And there was, I believe, some moments there for New England towards the death where they had launched some balls and, like, one of them hit on the crossbar and, like, barely deflected out. Like, otherwise completely had, you know, Celentano dead to rights and just unfortunate to hit the crossbar and ricochet away. So the chances did exist for New England late in this match. I hope they can kind of get it to click together, because I would like to see the East be a strong conference top to bottom, but I mean, we'll see. They definitely need some help, though. So returning players would be big for them.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. So, all right. What's next?
Oh, one other side note. 10 yellow cards in the second half.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and so I know our New England contributor agreed with me on this one. During the match, we were talking, the referee in this one, I chalked this one up to another very, very suspicious, poorly managed match by the referees. I mean,
a lot of controversies this weekend. This was that we haven't touched on.
That we haven't touched on.
I would say that's more intentional from my end. I didn't want to focus mainly on the referees.
Hey, we got the league memo.
We got the league memo. No, we didn't. I don't know. I just didn't want to focus on it. We focus on it a lot on this podcast. My take's the same. Pro has had weekends as bad as this as well.
Yeah, this is
the professional pro guys. So
yeah, I would say this one this one was quite bad.
Agreed. Yep, agreed.
Even amongst what we saw, this was a bad one, even within this weekend of bad refereeing.
Yeah.
Now I'm ready to go on. I'm going to talk about now Gavin's team, because Gavin, if I remember correctly, you did not see much, if any, of this match of Atlanta versus Orlando.
Obviously saw the highlights, saw the first 15-ish minutes. I saw us go 1-0 down.
I texted you about it, and I was like, I'm feeling really good about this bet that lies on Atlanta getting a W for me to win some money.
Hey, you should send over a fiver on that win, because you were going back and forth, and I said, nope, they're going to beat this Orlando team. They're going to beat
them. I was going back and forth on it, Gavin, and I will not be sending you a fiver, because
I'm really the reason why you won all that money.
No, I would say that the person who put the bet and thought it up originally is the reason that I won the money.
Fair enough. So, yeah, Atlanta beating Orlando. I mean, yeah, I saw the first 15 minutes. Atlanta go 1-0 up. We looked, I don't know, we just looked so uncharacteristic to who we are right now. We actually had someone early in the stream. He's a friend of mine. He runs Orlando City Fan TV. And he just said, we're in pain, Gavin. And Orlando City are in a lot of pain right now. No wins in MLS currently. Only a few goals to speak of as well. And have lost both of our games against Miami and Atlanta, our two rivals thus far. So
this could have been so much uglier, too, if not for David tweeting out that Galese should be benched partway through the match. And then immediately afterwards, Galese making an unbelievable double save.
Yes, that was an unbelievable double save. Should be up for save of the year currently, but there will be better saves to come, I'm sure. Actually,
not many.
Galese has won save of the year against Atlanta already once. So stopping a Dom Dwyer screamer, that would have ruined me. But I can't say I fully disagree. Galese has been really disappointing this season from an Orlando perspective. So I don't want to hog it all on Orlando. I'll let you speak to Atlanta. They got the win. They deserve the plaudits.
They did get the win.
But it's been an uncharacteristic start to the season for the Lions.
Yeah. So for me, one of my concerns is the Atlanta side seems to rely heavily on Giakoumakis. If you take away Giakoumakis' goals, I think you have four fewer points for Atlanta. So, like, I want to say, like, half their point total right now, if you were to take away his goals, like, if you stretch that out across the rest of the season, while that's great to have a player performing that well and being such a huge part of a team, but, like, that's not sustainable. Almada has been Almada was anonymous in this match. He's not been super impressive to me on the season as a whole, and I recognize that, look, not every game is going to be an all-star game for a young player. That's part of being a young player, is there's a lot of inconsistency. Totally expected for Almada. But if you're a team that's relying on Giakoumakis to have an unbelievable game week in, week out, your one injury, your one international call-up, your one, you know, ill-timed challenge away from catastrophe. So for me, it's a question of where's the rest of Atlanta, like, going to come in from in terms of contribution this season?
I think I don't know. I see what you're saying, but they have weapons. This Atlanta team does have weapons. You know, if Almada's underperforming and they're still getting results like this, then, like, they're going to be fine, is the way I think. Almada's a great player. I do think he's overpriced, personally, in terms of transfer market and all the storylines around him. But Giakoumakis is one of the best strikers in this league for me. He's been one of the best strikers since he stepped foot in the league. Zande Silva, they have up top. I'm not even going to attempt to say the guy's name. I think it starts with an L. I am going to attempt to say it's like Labonges or something like that.
Are you talking about Slits?
No, no, I'm not. What is his name? Okay, I gotta go find it now. Look what you're making.
I can't wait till you come back and you're like, oh, it's Stian Gregerson.
not the center back. Lobzoninzi. Saba. I'm calling him Saba. The Georgian.
That's player. I believe Saba is what's on his kit.
Saba. Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Him. He's a weapon. Mm-hmm. He scored against us. I really like this Atlanta team. I won't lie. On paper, across the board, they have quality in attack, in defense. They look really good in midfield. So I guess I have to say I disagree with you. I think they're going to be fine, even if they're not at full tilt right now.
We'll see. We will see, Gavin.
Hey, we do have this was submitted after we talked about Miami, but we do have another correspondent corner. I don't know if it's at the last one. So the New England one was from Matt Glenn at @MassMatt_Matt. And then this one's from another Matt at @MatthewHanau3. He is a
messy whisper
Miami fan. The messy whisper, yes, the renowned. He says Miami.
Is he gonna break more news right here?
Oh, I hope so. Very pleased with the start of the season. Preseason was really rough, and proving certain people wrong about Suarez's condition is great. Really worried about the defense on this team and how they fall apart under pressure. There is a starting caliber right back on the way, so that should help. Yeah, let's just hit on Suarez really quick. I wanted to call out. He is top of the table in goals and top of the table in assists. I think he's leading the way for MVP race right now.
That we would not talk about that.
Yes. He has 4 goals, tied with Giakoumakis and Jovelic. And he has 3 assists, tied with Mark Delgado. Wouldn't bill him as the most creative player in the league currently, but that's where we're at. So Suarez is atop both. Now, tell me why you didn't want to talk about that.
Boy, it makes this league look washed, doesn't it?
Boy, it does.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, he's got a good supporting cast, so.
Yeah, no, I will.
And 3 of those goal contributions are against a terrible Orlando City, so you're welcome, league.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
That is kind of my one saving grace right now, right, is let's look at Miami's actual schedule. They've played against Salt Lake, which they beat, and Salt Lake looked horrific in that match. Played against a very good performing LA Galaxy, only scored once. 5 goals against a horrific Orlando, and then lost to Montreal, and then beat DC United. The strength of that schedule, and then they also have a trip to New York Red Bulls, and then New York City FC, and Colorado. And, I mean, it's not a super challenging schedule to start off with. Now, granted, they have to play every team in the East twice. So there's going to be a lot of regression to the mean on this one. I guess I just don't know where the mean is yet. I mean, are these 5-0 performances, the 3 goals against DC, like, is dropping a whole bunch of goals every match going to be the norm, or is it going to be the 2 goals against Montreal or the 1 goal against Galaxy? And it's, you know, they're going to be good, but if other teams play well and put up 2 goals as well, then they're staying competitive and maybe winning over Miami. Cause look, 5 goals, 3 goals, like, you're not doing that every week. Just, you're
right. Yeah. It's going to be interesting for sure. It's going to be good to see how they play and what the answer to your question is. I'm really interested because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, no, okay. No idea. Truly.
I think, did we hit on all the games? Did we miss one?
We hit on all the games, yes.
Okay, it's been a long episode.
It's been a very long episode and we're not done yet.
Did you place your thingamabob?
I did. I placed a couple. I've got a Again, I'm waffling on what I want to lock in. Let me log back into my account here.
I'll start us off then. I'm gonna give you my three. Okay, for mm-hmm. we are 0 for 3 right now, right?
We're 0 for 4, Gavin.
0 for 4? It's only been 3 weeks. Oh no, it was week 4 review. Okay, my bad. Sorry. Okay, 0 for 4. I'm winning this time. And it includes all of our favorite teams. All three of them.
Oh my gosh, you're betting on Vancouver and Cincinnati and Orlando.
Cincinnati, Orlando, Vancouver. That's my three.
That is insane to me.
Plus 494. So I figured, why not? Orlando's home, Vancouver's home, and Cincinnati's home. So I went really safe this time. I want to beat you. I want to beat you bad.
You just want to get a win. I don't think you even want to beat me, Gavin.
Right, no, I want to get a win. That is correct.
Yeah.
I am nervous about this being the international break, though. There could be some funky results this weekend. Not sure how much betting I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, it's... I'm waffling between two, and both of them have a risky aspect that I could see myself regretting.
You're seeing the dollar signs, though.
I'm going to take the slightly less risky one, the more traditionally safe one. I'm taking FC Cincinnati over NYCFC, Columbus Crew over Charlotte, mm-hmm. and Seattle over San Jose. And I'm really banking on San Jose being bad for that one, because
that last one's a risk.
Yeah, traditionally, it should be a very safe pick.
Traditionally, yeah.
But. Traditionally should be a very safe pick. We'll see. The other
I've given up on betting on Seattle. I'll just say that.
Just my note on this one. The other one that I waffled on was Vancouver over RSL, St. Louis over DC, and LAFC over Nashville. And LAFC over Nashville is what concerns me.
LAFC don't have my trust.
Nashville don't have my trust either, though.
Nashville doesn't have my trust. And St. Louis
don't have my trust. That's going to be a draw. If I'm being honest.
Let's see. It's plus 300 for a draw. I might put a dollar on that. Yeah. Just do it.
That match screams draw to me.
Yeah.
So, but no, I'm locking in Cincinnati, Columbus, Seattle.
Fair. All right. So what was yours at? All right. Just quickly.
Mine was at plus 1,069.
Okay. So you're going a little bit riskier.
It shouldn't be that risky. I think it's just the Seattle portion's really lifting it.
Oh, are they away?
Yeah. Yes, they're so away to San Jose.
On mine, at least. Plus 160, Cincinnati minus 105 on mine, which I don't know how you don't take that. And then plus 140 for Columbus away. That one could get you as well. I could see a draw on that match, but...
I'm not convinced. Yeah. I think that's a safe one. Columbus are really hot right now.
Well, what are their internationals, though? That's the thing, international break. I don't know. Yeah. So, okay. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for all the correspondents who interacted and did Correspondent Corner. Going to try and do that more consistently. Sorry for forgetting last week. Make sure you read all their stuff on MLSNowPodcast.com. Someone was saying they have an article coming out. Travis Mitchell, who's an SKC fan. So keep an eye out for that. Russell, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me on social media at Mr. Danger Russ. You can find the podcast on social media at MLS Now Podcast. And our wonderful outro today, you can find our outro reader/speaker, Gavin, on social media at LionsBlog1. Gavin, listeners, till next time.
Till next time.